Welcome to the podcast series showcasing the winners of the 2024 Dyslexia Canada Educational Excellence Awards. We established this award to honor the outstanding contributions of individuals nationwide who work tirelessly to advance core pillars of Dyslexia Canada's mission, ensuring that all Canadian children have access to universal early screening and evidence-based, systematic, explicit foundational reading instruction. Right now, just over half of Canadian children are living in provinces committed to implementing that. Recently, the government of British Columbia announced that it will be implementing universal screening. That's a step forward, but the curriculum is still based on a balanced literacy approach, so it doesn't work well for students with dyslexia and many other kids. And you can see that in BC's literacy scores. They show that more than 34% of young adults in BC finish high school with low literacy skills. Our guest for this episode is trying to change that. Linda Siegel is an emeritus professor in the Department of Educational and Counseling Psychology and Special Education at the University of British Columbia, and is a renowned researcher and author of over 200 publications on early identification and intervention to prevent reading problems, dyslexia, reading and language development, mathematical concept learning, mathematical learning disabilities, and children learning English as a second language. She's a fierce advocate for children who's not afraid to ruffle a few feathers. She's also a recipient of the 2024 Dyslexia Canada Educational Excellence National Lifetime Achievement Award. Congratulations, Linda. Now, you've dedicated your entire career to studying and educating others about dyslexia and reading challenges. What was the catalyst of your involvement in the fight against dyslexia?
I started working with a pediatrician. His name was Bill Feldman, and we spent a lot of time visiting schools, talking to teachers and parents and even the students themselves. And it became clear to me that students with learning problems were not getting treated well by the school system, and that there was a lot of misunderstanding about what dyslexia and other learning disabilities were.
Was there a particular instance that heightened your awareness of that?
A young boy, teenager, who had dyslexia and was treated very badly by the system, committed suicide in front of his parents. And that was terrible, terrible tragedy for everybody concerned. And that really heightened my awareness of that we need to do something quickly and massively to prevent this from happening again.
Was it someone that you had some interaction with?
Oh, it was somebody who I knew personally, knew his parents.
That must have been devastating. It sounds like that and the broader problem of learning challenges in general are really what got you to where you are today.
I also did some research with young people living on the street in Ontario and found that most of them had learning disabilities that had not been properly identified and treated. And they had all gone through at least grade 10 in the Ontario school system. So I think this is an indication of the problem that students who have learning difficulties are not properly treated by the system. I also did some research in Ontario and found that most of the adolescents who had committed suicide had learning disabilities that had not been properly detected and treated.
One of your focuses has not only been raising awareness about dyslexia, but also dispelling some of the myths that surround it. Now, for instance, in your book, Not Stupid, Not Lazy, what are some of the social issues and trauma that you describe happening when children are not properly identified and supported? And I guess this kind of ties back into what you were just talking about.
Children are aware when they're struggling in school, and often the difficulties are ignored, or the parents are told that the child will just grow out of it, which doesn't happen. So the students really face issues of self-esteem, and they're struggling with their self-esteem, their sense of worth. So that's one issue. Another issue is that they often face bullying and teasing in school, and sometimes it's just one or two other children but it's enough to really make them suffer. They suffer issues of self-esteem, sometimes depression, sometimes anxiety. And it's really important that we detect these learning disabilities and that we do something about it. And that's just not happening in the schools.
Why do you think that's the case?
I think there are several reasons why this isn't happening. First of all, a lack of knowledge of teachers and other school personnel. Another reason is that the identification of learning disabilities has been made excessively complex and difficult and expensive and time-consuming, so it doesn't happen. We know how to detect these potential learning difficulties early, kindergarten, grade one, and we know what to do about it when we find it, but it just doesn't happen. Some of it is lack of knowledge, lack of understanding. Some of it is there are some people who make a lot of money from books and programs and consulting that really don't understand learning disabilities, and they're not willing to give up their profits. And so there are a lot of children who suffer.
It certainly does not sound like you've ever been afraid to speak your mind, especially when it comes to helping children with dyslexia. So why is it so important to you to speak out about that?
I think really it has to be stopped because there are children that are suffering. Here's one example. In many places, you need a very elaborate and expensive psychoeducational assessment to be defined as having a learning disability, and that often includes the IQ test. Well, these are very expensive, and school districts are way behind in there in doing these assessments. Sometimes people have to wait as long as 2 years. So people who have the funds can go to a private psychologist and get this assessment and then can have access to the intervention that's needed. But it doesn't have to be this way. The assessment does not have to be so expensive and complicated. It can be done very simply. It can be done by teachers and other school personnel, and that children who really need the help can get it without having to wait 2-3 years.
And ultimately, you want to try to reach those children as early as possible, right?
Yeah, and we know how to do that. And we know what to do when we find them. And it's not expensive. It involves some changes in the curriculum, but it's very simple, easy to do. And we could prevent a lot of problems if we identified children who were struggling early and we gave them the appropriate intervention.
When was the last time that you spoke your mind about a business or someone that was profiting from children with dyslexia?
A few days ago, in terms of discussions with the Ministry of Education.
What's the background there?
Well, the curriculum in many provinces is really not appropriate. The curriculum for the teaching of reading is not appropriate. It uses methods that have no scientific validation. So it's really important that provincial ministries institute appropriate curriculum to teach reading. But there are people who, for philosophical reasons or for financial reasons, espouse methods that have no validity to them. So I think it's really important that ministries of education are aware of this.
On your Wikipedia page, there is an anecdote about your critique of some brain training programs, notably the Aerosmith program founded by Barbara Aerosmith Young in 1978. Your comments were featured in a CBC documentary titled Fixing My Brain, and prior to broadcast, Aerosmith Young's lawyers threatened the CBC with a lawsuit. Can you give us some insight into what happened there?
Well, there is no scientific evidence that the Aerosmith program works, but parents whose children participate in it are charged, I think, about $37,000 a year. And it just simply doesn't work. So I think the public has to know about this. And I said so when I was interviewed for the documentary. I called it a fraud, which it is. And they took that out of it. I think it really is an example of how parents are taking advantage of, that they see their children suffering. The school system isn't doing very much about it, and that the parents turn to whatever they can, and so that the children suffer.
So ultimately preying on their desperation.
Yes.
Now, you've been advocating about the importance of early screening and intervention for decades now, and I'd like to discuss the study in North Vancouver in the late 1990s, where you implemented screening and early intervention across a cohort of kindergarten classes, demonstrating quite clearly that reading difficulties can be prevented. So what were the main findings of that study?
That with the early screening and intervention, and I have to say the teachers were wonderful, and they really worked hard at providing the appropriate intervention, and it was very successful, that we ended up with very few children with reading problems. It was actually 1.5% of the students had significant reading difficulties, which is really quite astounding and different from the typical 10 to 15% that people talk about. But another finding was that children who come to school without knowing any English, so English, they're learning English as a second or additional language, we had the same success with them. We also had the same success with the First Nations children who were part of the school district in North Vancouver. So it was very successful, not very expensive to implement, and required some excellent work by the teachers. And the teachers were really wonderful.
Across Canada, children who speak a language at home other than English or French have much lower literacy rates. You work to show that with effective instruction, that could be prevented. How exactly does that work?
They had the instruction early. So it was good instruction in learning the language, learning the skills that are necessary for reading. And because they were young, they were 5 and 6 years old when this instruction happened, it's possible to have a very significant impact, because the young brain, the brain that age, for reasons that we don't understand, learns language very easily. It's much easier to learn a language when you're that age than when you're an adolescent or adult. That's one of the mysteries of the brain that we can't yet explain. But the point is that this instruction took place early when, as I said, when the children were 5 or 6, and that's what made the difference. It was good instruction. The other aspect of this is that Canada has a program called Heritage Language, where children can learn their reading and writing in their first language, if it's not English or French, after school or on Saturdays and Sundays. And this kind of instruction really helps them with English. So the two factors, the early intervention and the maintaining the heritage language, really helps children develop the skills they need to be successful in school.
Well, you figured that out 25 years ago, and now we're finally starting to see early screening being implemented in provinces like Ontario, Alberta, and New Brunswick. So what do you make of this recent movement in favor of it now?
Well, I think it's wonderful. I have yet to see it in action, waiting for that to happen. But one of the reasons that it didn't happen before is there is this philosophy that we should just let children develop and not put any constraints on that development, not kind of help it along, which I think is a mistaken philosophy, because in a skill like reading, you really need training in the skill. You can't just leave it up to chance that it will happen.
That seems to make sense. Now, you were one of the scientific advisors on the Ontario Right to Read Inquiry report, and in that report, there's a recommendation to end the use of IQ scores in diagnosing dyslexia. Can you explain that recommendation?
That's something that I've been recommending for 40 years for a variety of reasons. The most important one is that your IQ score doesn't predict how you will benefit from intervention. It's useless in that respect. Another reason is there are no differences in basic reading skills between children of different IQ levels. So your IQ doesn't predict your reading ability. As a matter of fact, it's not clear that it predicts anything. But the IQ also is very culturally biased test and very inappropriate for children who are from a different cultural background. So there's really no use for the IQ test. I facetiously say that we should burn all the IQ tests. And I think that it's not so facetious. It just is not really useful in helping understand how children learn.
So it's now up to provincial governments to update their learning disability identification criteria to align with the recommendation in the OHRC report. And it's been one of those things that Dyslexia Canada and organizations have been advocating for. So why is it important for provincial governments to update their learning disability identification criteria?
Well, without the IQ test, in some jurisdictions, children cannot be identified as having a learning problem. And if they're not identified as having a learning problem, then they don't get the remediation that they need. So the IQ test serves no purpose, and it just should be eliminated.
We talked a little earlier about your advocacy for early screening, and you mentioned that you had the ear of government there in BC. Are you hopeful that it's going to be implemented in BC?
Yes, and hopefully that it will be implemented in Ontario also.
What's the value in that?
Well, there are several aspects of it. First of all, it's really important to develop a child's self-esteem. And if a child is struggling and doesn't get help, they assume it's because they're stupid or they're not trying hard or whatever. So it's really important to recognize that there's a problem. Another reason is it's much easier to intervene and help children when they're younger, that the brain is more plastic, the brain is more organized to deal with other languages and language learning.
For teachers who are just starting to get their first taste of this and are looking at the challenges ahead, as hopefully more provinces decide to adopt these kind of programs, what advice would you have to give to them?
I think it's very important for teachers to be aware of what we call progress monitoring. That is, understanding the basic skills involved in reading, and the same thing would be true of mathematics, but we're talking about reading now, to be able to monitor those skills. And as soon as it's clear that a child is having difficulty, then to try and understand what you can do to help with that difficulty. An example is a program called Firm Foundations, which was developed by the District of North Vancouver. And they have a book which explains some of the activities and games that you can do with children to help develop the skills that they need for reading. So that's readily available to teachers, and it's very useful for teachers.
Is there a particular school district, or maybe in a broader sense, even a province, that you think is getting it right now?
No. I wish I could say yes, but no, not yet. I think Ontario is trying, British Columbia is trying, but there's a lot of difficulties in implementing this kind of change.
So what's the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge is teacher education faculties, the teacher training, that it has not changed as we've learned more. And in many faculties of education, teachers don't learn about dyslexia. They don't learn about how to teach reading. They don't learn what to do when a child is struggling. So until we have those changes in the faculties of education, we're not really going to make progress.
Linda, it has been absolutely wonderful talking to you. Your depth of knowledge and your experience has really provided a lot of insight during our conversation today, and I really appreciate that. And congratulations again on winning the award.
Well, thank you very much.
If you're in British Columbia, stay tuned for Dyslexia Canada's upcoming series of workshops for BC educators focusing on the science of reading. For more information, visit the Dyslexia Canada website and social media channels. Thanks for listening to this episode of the series showcasing the winners of the 2024 Dyslexia Canada Educational Excellence Awards. To learn more about this year's winners, visit dyslexiacanada.org, where you can read a blog about each of them. Stay tuned for our next episode.